All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I always thank my good friend, Dr. Michael Rosen, who is here every other Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And, man, does he bring the energy. But I want to also welcome my next guest, Mr. David Liners, who is with Wisdom. Good morning. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. Great.
We haven't been together in a while.
Yeah, a couple of years.
At another station. I always enjoyed having you on to talk about, you know, what's going on. And right now, if ever there was a time that we needed to hear from someone who knows about incarceration, it's right now. Mm-hmm. It is playing such a prominent role in the mayoral, gubernatorial election, the Senate election, and even the state attorney general's election. At the middle of it all, allegations about those three men, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, President Governor Tony Evers, and Attorney General Josh Call, somehow being involved in releasing hail on the entire state of Wisconsin. And, you know, if you believe the commercials, 330 murderers, you know, 40 rapists, child molesters, and all of those things, these men have been at the root of those things. You want to clarify any of those things? Well, first, tell us a little bit about you and Wisdom.
Sure. So Wisdom's a network of organizations. It's mostly faith-based organizations around the state. We started with Micah in Milwaukee. Now there's about a dozen such organizations. And we kind of work on various issues of social justice, and reform of the criminal legal system is kind of one of the foremost ones. Also within Wisdom, we have a network of its own, which is EXPO, Ex-Incarcerated Right. People Organizing, and I know you've had some folks on your show from there. So we do a lot of work in leadership development and a lot of work in kind of trying to help ordinary people get organized to have an impact on the issues they care about.
So when you hear and see what everybody's been looking at with these heinous commercials and somehow blaming the governor and lieutenant governor and the state attorney general, you want to put some facts where the fiction is?
Sure. I'd love to.
Okay.
So if we got a second, we'll start with
yes.
The parole one, because that's the one that keeps coming up, the thing you just mentioned, releasing
right.
All these people and stuff. So what I think a lot of folks don't quite understand is that all the people who are eligible for parole, almost all, there's a couple of exceptional things, but were sentenced back in the 1980s and 1990s. I mean, they've been in prison at minimum
right.
22 years. When they were sentenced, we had a whole different system than what we have now. And the system allowed for parole. So here was the deal. Let's say you got a 100-year sentence. Under the old law.
Right.
You were eligible for parole after 25 years.
Didn't matter whether it was murder or whatever it was.
It didn't matter. I mean, that was part of the judge did that.
Right.
If judges wanted to be sure you were sent away for 40 years, they would sentence you to 160. It was
right.
25%. The second thing about that, so at that point, you're eligible to see the parole commission and prove that you've done what
Reformed.
You need to do to
right.
rehabilitate yourself. Kind of the understanding people change. You know, none of us is the same person at 45 that we were at 18.
That's correct.
You know, so part of it is that. The second piece, just to understand, for understanding these ads, is you had that 100-year sentence, they had to release you after 67. So after 2/3 of the sentence is your mandatory release date. You're still on parole after that time, but they had to release you. So half of the releases that they're talking about are those mandatory releases. These are people who may have committed, you know, a serious crime. I mean, you don't go to prison for 20 years for jaywalking.
Right.
But the judge who sentenced them set it up such that they could be released after 25% and had to be released after 67%. So about half the people being released are at their mandatory release date. Even under Scott Walker, those people got paroled, people who hit that 2/3 mark. The other people who are being released, have been released by the parole commission, are people who have demonstrated over a long period of time in the Department of Corrections. They've demonstrated that they've reformed themselves. They've been trusted with more responsibility. They've been given more freedoms. They might have gotten work release. Kind of a chance to really prove. They have to prove that they have a plan. They're very carefully supervised after they get out. And here's the thing. Of all those people who were paroled in the last 4 years, none of them has committed a new violent crime after they got out. Zero.
100%.
Now, some of them have gotten revoked on technicalities. Right. Some of them have gotten arrested on...
Yeah, but not a crime. Not a serious crime.
Nobody has murdered anybody. Nobody has raped anybody. Nobody's been convicted of any serious violent crime out of that group. You know, and part of it just makes sense. They're older.
Right.
You know, a lot of these people being paroled are in their 50s, their 60s, and I think everybody knows, especially with men, after about 35, your propensity to commit violent crimes drops like a rock. You know, it's not, you don't have much of that. So it's really misleading to say he's letting these dangerous people. They're really not dangerous at all. As a matter of fact, their level of committing crimes is probably lower than the average population.
You know, David, when you hear people say that these people have been there, you know, Governor Evers' board, parole board is letting these people go, and it's on him, it's his parole board. You know, the out of the four guys there, Governor Evers appointed one,
right,
who was the chairperson. The other three guys were there from Scott Walker's term.
Right.
And so to say that it's Governor Evers who has let these people go, is that a misnomer?
Right. He doesn't make that decision. It's the chair of the parole commission who makes the final decision. But really, if people have beef with people getting out, they should go talk to the judge who sentenced
yes.
them back in the 1980s. Because this was known the day they were sentenced. This was going to come. This day was going to come, and the judge set it up with those things. So at that time, which is probably when best to make the decision about what to do, the judge, after hearing all the evidence, after finding the person guilty, chose to give them this sentence. And this is how that sentence plays out.
So their response to that is the liberal judges.
They weren't necessarily all liberal judges. No, that's just wrong.
So let me see if I have it right. So the legislature creates the law.
Mm-hmm.
The judges enforce the law.
Right.
And once the judge enforces the law and sets the term, mm-hmm. then that's it. From the standpoint of whoever this person is, they have fulfilled that term,
mm-hmm.
and the law is what it is, and you really can't change that. Well, I mean,
correct.
He could, but, you know, you could, but not for masses of people.
Right.
Individually, you may say, well, you know, Earl Ingram, he's still a danger. You know, maybe we'll do this, but not the masses of the people who were sentenced before. Truth in sentencing, three
correct.
Strikes, you're out, no parole, that Governor Walker right. implemented.
Correct. So, yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, basically the parole commission has been applying the law, has been doing exactly what it is that they were mandated to do. So people being released on parole, there's probably 2,000 more people who should be released, frankly. There's still 2,000 parole-eligible people in prison. They've been very cautious about it. They've been very, very systematic. And that's why their success rate is tremendously high. Most of the people who've been released on parole, those who are still, you know, young enough that they're able to work, immediately are getting into the workforce and are immediately trying to make a positive contribution.
You know, David, I just somehow don't envision the parole board knowing the history and the record of the guys that they're looking at, just willy-nilly just say, well, okay, we're going to send this person back.
Absolutely. They are incredibly cautious about it. And most of the guys who get paroled, or, and women, go through process after process after process. They get what they call a defer. You know, they'll say, okay, do this and that and come back and see us in 10 months. You know, right. It's a 10-month defer. And then they'll come back after 10 months and they'll say, okay, now do this and that and come back after 6 months. I mean, they are very carefully.
And again, you're saying in many instances, these people have been incarcerated over a quarter of a century.
Right. Almost all of them. Yeah.
And so they've been watched and monitored throughout all that time.
Yeah.
They're deemed to no longer be a threat to society.
Right.
And now by law, they have to be released.
Absolutely. I mean, if they have a lot of conduct issues while they're in prison, they're not going to get released on parole. You know, so you're right. They have proven that they've got it together, and a lot of times it's people who, you know, a lot of, you know, so-called violent crimes are kind of one-time things, and, you know, people learn, people get older.
So for instance, there's this site called Wisconsin Right Now, and it says, freed, Joseph Rowling, executed mother, stepfather, and stepsister, and it's listed as Tony Evers killers. He's one of Tony Evers killers. Right. There's no telling how long ago this was, right?
Exactly.
And even though, because there was no death penalty in the state of Wisconsin, normally if there was a death penalty, they probably would have gotten a death sentence, but there wasn't that in our state.
But you know what there was in our state, there always has been, is there is the possibility of life without parole.
Right.
And again, the judge didn't give them that. You know, the judge.
Because there may have been extenuating circumstances, whatever.
Yeah, and also, you know, most of the civilized world doesn't incarcerate people ever for more than about 20 years, unless there's some incredibly strange circumstance, because people change and people can be rehabilitated.
So the other part of it, David, is it probably doesn't cost a lot of money to keep people incarcerated, right? Listen, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Mr. David Liners is in the studio of Wisdom. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can join us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. My guest is David Liners. He is with Wisdom. And I asked him if he would come in and clarify the conversation that's being had through these commercials that have flooded television screens nonstop by the Republicans and blaming Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes and also Attorney General Josh Call for releasing all of these murderers and all these other people that they are trying to lead people to believe are going to come and get you and your family. You know, David, before we went to break, I was, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, these guys by law have to be released.
Right.
And it's not like, you know, we built a lot of prisons during a time going back 20 years, 25 years ago. And people fail to understand a state comparable to ours, Minnesota, has half the prison population that we have.
Right.
Tell me how it makes sense for us to continue to put, you know, the tax dollars that we have into these prisons. Is Minnesota a less safe place now than Wisconsin because they've released? I mean, a more dangerous place than Wisconsin because they've released these prisoners?
There's a really interesting chart. I wish I would have brought it along and knew how to tell you how to find it.
And we'll bring it the next time.
That I've seen that The crime rates, violent crime rates in Wisconsin and Minnesota go up and down and up and down at exactly the same rate, even as our prison population goes up and up and theirs goes up just a little. Like, how many people you put in prison and the rate of violent crime honestly have nothing to do with each other. There is no correlation. Putting more people in prison doesn't result in less violent crime. So Minnesota has actually made that decision that they're going to, did make the decision a long time ago.
Right.
They're backsliding a little bit these days, but that they're only going to, you know, incarcerate the people who are truly a danger to the public and only for as long as they need to. And Wisconsin just made very different decisions.
Well, you know, and a lot of those decisions clearly were made with the war on drugs, and so we have yet to really address that. Oh, you talked about Ron Johnson,
I just think it's really interesting that I think, you know, Ron Johnson should actually be congratulated for having voted for the First Step Act at the federal level, which, you know, tried to reduce some of the kind of the exaggerated sentences and was actually retroactive. So the day the First Step Act was passed, 3,000 people got released from federal prison.
So what's the First Step Act?
So it's a federal law regarding federal, mostly about drug crimes, and it changed a lot of the sentencing that was so extreme. People were getting just decades in prison for relatively minor things. So it changed a lot of those laws, but the incredible thing about it was retroactive. So people who were in prison for things that were now not going to be something you get sent to prison for could be released. And to his credit, Ron Johnson voted for that. It wasn't an election year. He was happy to see people be released from prison who didn't need to be there. So, you know, I just think it would make sense that we just kind of keep that same spirit alive and look at Wisconsin. Look at all the people who don't need to be in prison.
So what role does the attorney general, the lieutenant governor, and the governor have in the release of these people?
In releasing people on parole, none. You know, the governor appoints a parole commissioner, a chair of the parole commission, and that person is approved by the state senate.
Oh, approved by the state senate.
Yeah, and what actually happened...
In this case, they didn't know the one that Evers...
Yeah, they didn't approve him, but they didn't disapprove him.
Right.
So the state senate held on. They had hearings. The hearings were very positive. The committee that did the hearings favored him, and then for whatever political reasons, the state senate never actually voted on him, so he wasn't officially confirmed. But the state senate at any time in the last 4 years could have voted him out because they had that power. It was sitting before them. So, you know, that's it. You know, once the commissioner is there, the chair is there, it's them who makes the decision, and they have these civil servant commissioners who advise the chair on, you know, the progress of the various people who are eligible for parole.
So is it safe to say these commercials are really misleading?
Oh, that's very safe to say, yeah. It's, it's ignoring all kinds of facts, you know. And again, I would say the main fact is that these people being released is the law playing out exactly the way it's supposed to. And again, if people don't like that, they can go back and talk to the judges from 30 years ago and say you should have given them a longer sentence. But that was an option then, and they didn't do it. So it's, you know, I think everybody understands you don't move the goalposts in the middle of the game, you know? And that's apparently what they think we should have done. And, you know, that partly might be illegal and also certainly is unethical.
You know, David, generally people who have been locked up wind up going back home, right? I mean, they're not going to... If you committed a crime in Milwaukee and you were locked up for 20 years, it's safe to say you don't have connections anywhere else. Your family and whatever... That's where they are, right? So you're going to come back to where it was your origin.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, people who are released on parole have to have a plan. they have, you know, for the most part, they've got a job lined up. They know where they're going to live. They know how things, you know, are going to be set up. I mean, it actually is a very good process, you know, that gets followed. You know, we think they do it a little too slow. You know, they could hustle it a little bit. But, you know, people who come out are coming into a very known situation, and they're very much supervised. And like I say, they are among the safest people to live around in our society.
Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. My guest is David Liners from Wisdom. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. My guest is David Liners of Wisdom. And you know, David, I'm so glad that you accepted the invitation. And I promise you, it won't be the last time. And we'll bring you in again and again and again, because this is one of those issues and one of those topics that shouldn't go away after the election.
Mm-hmm.
It's a topic that we need to constantly educate people about, because the answer, if we somehow think that locking everybody up is the answer, I always use the analogy that they get a young man who's 18 years old, he's been committing some petty crime since he was a kid. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's a felon. And maybe he didn't commit the worst crime in the world, but he's a felon with a gun. And we cheer because we finally got him. We got him now. We got David. We're gonna lock him up. And then there are people who say, yeah, they stole a car. Lock him up for stealing a car and throw away the key. Okay. Well, whatever produced David, he's got three younger brothers coming up the same way. How can the answer be more police and lock them up, David?
I absolutely agree. I mean, we need to deal with what the problems are. You know, we need to deal with people where they're at. We need to deal with things as public health crises.
Right.
You know, the mental health, substance use disorder, those are public health problems. Those aren't criminal problems. You know, we need, you know, kids, you know, who've gotten onto a bad track, we need to find a way to get them onto a better track. And like you mentioned before, we spend a fortune on prisons and law enforcement. If we even spent a part of that, you know, if we spent 10% of that on programs to do a lot more outreach and a lot more intervention with kids, you know, when it's early on, we could do a lot. If we could close, do you know how much it costs to run the Green Bay prison for a year?
No.
This is to house 1,000 people. The prison in Green Bay costs us $50 million a year to run. That's one of our 36 prisons.
Wow.
The prison in Waupun costs about the same amount. Just imagine if we could reduce the prison population by enough to close the Green Bay prison or the Waupun prison, and we invested $50 million in helping at-risk kids with the issues that are causing them trouble. And we use those same kind of resources to keep people out of prison rather than use all the resources just to catch them and say, ha, gotcha.
You know, what's the name of the juvenile prison?
Lincoln Hills.
Lincoln Hills.
Yeah.
Lincoln Hills has, what, 20 some odd?
Right, yeah.
They've got 20 some children
right
locked up. I don't know what that costs to keep that facility going, but for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
It's a huge facility, and you've got 20-some people locked up. How does that make any sense?
Exactly. You know, and you know, hopefully we're able to at least build a better facility that's going to be more therapeutic, and it's going to be more in the community and closer to people's families here. I think that's a step. I don't think that's the best thing to do, but it's certainly a better thing to do than what we're doing now.
So, David, let's talk about, you know, cash bail.
Sure.
Because we got a guy who keeps calling and says, Mandela Barnes wrote the law for cash bail. Give us the truth about what cash bail is.
Well, cash bail basically says, you know, the decision is what happens when someone's arrested and charged, but before their trial. You know, should they be out? What cash bail does is it has the judge say it's X number of dollars for you to be released. You know, it could be $500. It could be, like Kyle Rittenhouse, $1 million.
Right.
And then the criterion for whether you get to be free until your trial is whether or not you've got money.
Yeah.
The proposals to end cash bail are saying we should either be releasing or holding people depending
that
on how
violent.
Dangerous
right.
they are. You know, if somebody is really a danger to society, then $1 million bail still doesn't make sense because you might
luck up and get it. Yeah.
You might be friends with Mr. Pillow,
yeah.
and you can get free. So, you know, the thing is the criterion shouldn't be about how much money you have. The criterion should be whether or not you're a danger to society. Illinois, actually, January 1st, is going to implement no cash bail.
So,
and that's what the decision is. It's not saying everybody goes free. It's saying there needs to be a decision. Is this person safe to be out in the community or not?
So the reason that makes sense is because everybody who's arrested is not a rapist, child rapist, is not a murderer. And so they made a mistake. They have a job
mm-hmm.
and a family.
Mm-hmm.
What sense does it make for that person they committed a crime that person should lose the job
right.
and access to supporting a family? Doesn't that make sense?
Right. And remember, these are people who are charged with a crime.
Right.
They're not
they convicted.
They haven't been found guilty. They're, you know, so they're innocent until proven guilty. So that's, you know, that's a big part of it. And yeah, you know, a lot of people. You know, not everybody who's awaiting trial is in jail. Most people awaiting trial are not in jail.
Right.
So it's just the whole thing about bail is just what's the criterion for whether you get out? Is it whether you have money or is it whether the judge deems you as a danger
so
to society?
So if you follow what people are clamoring for, some people, we'd never be able to, we wouldn't have enough room.
Yeah, I mean, if we held everybody without bail,
right.
it would not only wouldn't there be enough, it would just be ridiculous.
Right.
The number of people awaiting trial for all kinds of things. So,
yeah.
No, we can't hold everybody. So then the decision is, how do you decide which people should be held? And if the decision is made according to how much money you have, that's just, it's neither safe nor fair.
So based on your explanation, mm-hmm. Again, the commercials that say Mandela Barnes ended cash bail or he wrote the bill to end cash bail, again, misleading.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, because, you know, yes, he did write the bill to end cash bail, but it doesn't mean everybody would have been out free. I don't know if you saw in the newspaper a few weeks ago that PolitiFact
actually
pointed out that if Mandela's bill had been adopted, The guy who drove into the Waukesha Christmas parade would not have been out. Like, PolitiFact kind of pointed that out, so that ending cash bail would have, if we're all going to focus on one particular guy, would have actually had the
even
right
though,
impact.
Even though that was pointed out and truthful, you can't make people, you know, believe the truth. Because there's still people who say,
mm-hmm.
because of those commercials,
right.
That.
But I think, you know, I really think most people are, you know, want to be reasonable. You know, there's some people who are just there. They're just determined, you know,
right.
that they're just dug in and they're just not going to hear anything. But I think most people want to be reasonable. I think, you know, they're not getting access to the right information. Like, they're being misled what cash bail is. They're being misled.
Right.
What does it mean to have people released on parole? They're being misled about what does it mean to reduce the prison population. I think most people, given a chance to actually understand the issues, are very reasonable about it.
You know, which is the reason I extended the invitation to you and others to come on, because to continue to see that drumbeat,
mm-hmm.
I think is just not right.
Right.
And you know, and deceitful.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly it was meant to be, all that was meant to be deceitful.
Right.
But so then let's go here then, David, because when we look at the problems and these people who have committed crimes, all of us have committed in some way, shape, or form. I don't think any of us have fallen out of heaven. Oh, maybe Connor did. But you and I didn't fall down out of heaven. Maybe
thanks, Earl.
or maybe Ron Johnson did. But clearly people make mistakes in life. There's a reason why they used to call it the Department of Corrections?
Right. Right. Remember back when they used to call them reformatories?
Reformatories.
Because that was the idea. It's a place to reform.
And in the 20s and 30s, they reformed people, right? I mean, I don't know what they're doing in those facilities today, but is there any more of reforming going on? I thought they took that away.
Yeah, there's some pockets of really good things happening, you know, in the prison system. The Wisconsin, what do they call it? Resource Center. There's some places that do a really good job, but a lot of people are just being warehoused. They're just sitting there. But, you know, just to say, you know, you were saying before about the prison expansion boom. Back in the 1980s, you know, you and I are both old enough to remember the
right.
1980s, Wisconsin had about the same population we have today. We had like 3,000 people in prison.
That's correct.
The crime rate hasn't gone up or down significantly since the 80s to now. Like, but somehow
well, you can't
now
get
we have
people 20, to believe 000, that.
Now we have 20,000 people in prison. So
and we're not safer.
Right. There's a lot of people there who just don't need to be there. You know, and that's a big thing. You know, one of the other ads you see all the time is about, you know, they want to reduce the prison population by half, as if they're just going to go and just willy-nilly just, you know, release half the people in prison. There's a really common sense way. By the way, you know who else thinks we should reduce the prison population by half?
Who?
Newt Gingrich. You know, this isn't a liberal idea.
Do you mean the contract on America?
Right. That very
that
Newt
guy.
Gingrich
yeah, okay.
believes we should cut the prison population by half because it's silly that we've got this many people in prison. You know, and
more than any other developed nation on earth.
By a lot.
Right.
You know, by a big margin.
Right.
So in Wisconsin, we got about 20,000 people in prison. About 4,000 to 5,000 of those people are there for crimeless revocations. These are people who did their sentence, and they broke a technical rule of supervision. They missed a meeting. They failed a drug test. They went out of state without asking permission.
So wait a minute.
And they get bounced back into prison.
So wait a minute, David.
Yeah?
You're telling me that a person who's freed misses a meeting, and they can be sent back to prison.
Absolutely. And the
and that does happen.
It happens a lot. It happens about 4,000 times a year.
Wow.
And this about 3,000 times a year. And the average time they're sent back for is a year and a half.
So this poor soul in a bit of weakness smoked a joint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they did, smoked a joint.
Yeah.
Something that's legal in many parts of the country.
Right.
You know, and so that's reason and rationale enough to send somebody back to jail that we then have to pay and subsidize taxpayers to keeping that person locked up.
Absolutely. So we've got literally thousands of people in prison. Remember, 1,000 people in Green Bay costs us $50 million a year. We have at least somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000, you know, people who are in for crimeless revocations. They served a sentence. They came out. They didn't follow. They were found outside of some rule of supervision, some of which get really picky. You know, it's like they smoked a joint. Some of it is like leaving the county without asking permission. You know, those kinds of things. So that's one population we've got. We've got this other population we talked about earlier of old people. You know, we just built in Oak Hill over by Madison, they just built an assisted living facility on the grounds of Oak Hill. And the Department of Corrections, if they had the money, would love to build 3 or 4 more of them because they have so many people who are that sick and that old that they need assisted living. It's like
paid
a fortune.
What part of it is we have these facilities, they've already been invested in. Mm-hmm. We need a product. I mean, the product is human capital.
Yeah.
We don't want to shut these down. They're built in towns and communities.
Yeah. I mean, I hear that, and
that's not, you're saying, you know, that's not, you don't think that's the major.
Well, I think it's a reason.
Plays a role.
It definitely plays a role and that sort of thing. But here's the thing right now. You've seen the ads on TV, other ads on TV. The Department of Corrections can't keep people working for them. They have an incredible shortage.
Right, it's true.
We've...
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is David Liners of Wisdom. You know, David, these are questions, and I'm sure you guys get to sit down with the folk who maybe not make the laws, but you certainly get to sit down with the people in corrections and other things. How are they accepting these kinds of discussions?
They're very careful about it. They hear us respectfully. I think there's some kinds of, you know, reforms that we can talk with the Department of Corrections about, and there's some very positive steps they've taken with the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility would be a great example of a really positive step that they've reduced how many people are in there by a lot. So we're able to have some conversations with them about it, but again, They're very cautious people.
So is it so much that they're cautious? The Secretary of Corrections, I've reached out to him and to see if we could get him to come on, and I'm going to keep knocking on that door because I think it's important that we hear that, right? Mm-hmm. That the public has a right to know. You know, their views on things. And right. So Kevin Carr, I know, and I've had him mm-hmm. on in a different radio station. So I don't know if the message has gotten to him or not, but I'm going to keep on knocking on the door.
Good. I think that's important, yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you then, what do you want to say to people who are listening, David, about what they see and what they're going to continue to see as we move closer to this election, where fiction and where truth is not meeting one another?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is, really, when it comes to these things about prison and about the criminal legal system, it's like, just take a minute to kind of learn the truth behind the different things you're hearing. It's... like I say, I think most folks, once they just, you know, it's not like you have to spend hours and days, you know, learning about it. But I think most folks, once you just kind of understand a little bit more about what's going on with the system, you'll understand that it's not these just kind of simple answer kind of things that are out there, that we really can create a much healthier system with actually not a whole lot of trouble.
And shouldn't we as a society... as you stated before, create these. You look at what's happening with young people, you know, and the tough, difficult lives mm-hmm. that they're living in the cities, and you just about know that unless we as a society steps in. You can see that this is where many of these young people are headed. Wouldn't it make sense that we make the effort to try to deter that? It's cheaper early on to address these issues, David, than to wait until somebody has committed the ultimate crime that they wind up locked up forever?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's what you're talking about is absolutely true. The other thing is, I just think young people in general do stupid things. I mean, you know, that's part of growing up. People make mistakes. They do rash things. They don't think straight. They don't. Now, some people have a safety net built around them that when they mess up, there's somebody there to catch them. There's somebody there to correct them. There's somebody there to kind of help them through. And some people, it's just, you know, I think, you know, whatever. I think suburban white kids screw up a lot, but they're not made to immediately get on a track to go to prison for it. You know, they get a chance. They get a chance to kind of get things fixed. And that's, everybody needs that. Everybody needs a chance.
You know, David, the fact that young children have this access to guns, that, you know, and so drugs and guns, clearly the big issue in urban centers across this nation are drugs and guns. And everybody knows it. Yeah. And so we can't stop kids 12, 14 years old from getting their hands on guns. How can that possibly be that the most powerful nation on earth can't stop children from getting their hands on guns?
Yeah, I...
And then, because they're so young, and those of us who know that a child's brain, front lobe, doesn't develop fully until they're 25, 26 years old, we know that, then we need to work really hard to make sure they don't get their hands on guns. It used to be that way.
Absolutely, you know, and again... You know, kids, I mean, you know, I'm not young. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, you know, kids got into fights.
You and I were kids at the same time.
Right.
Well, yes.
You know, kids got into fights all the time, but I never had any fear that anybody was going to get killed.
Because there were no guns around, right?
People didn't have guns with them.
Right.
You know,
But now we know that kids 12, 13 years old have guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is scary. It's like the odds are, the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
That, you know, and this, the margin of error for kids, or from a lot of people anymore, is just almost non-existent.
And so you've taken a life.
Mm-hmm.
You're 24 years old. You're 18 years old. You're locked up. And now, you know, your life stops.
You know, Earl, if I could just kind of throw this in. You know, most of our organization are faith communities from a lot of different religious traditions.
Right.
All of us actually believe in, like, redemption.
Right.
And we actually believe people can change. We believe that God made us to be something and that we can reform our lives and that sort of thing. And I just think, you know, I don't know why we lost that. You know, as a larger society,
but right.
People change, people grow, people can be forgiven. And I think we've completely, you know, the people who claim to be on the side of religion seem to have lost that in the public sphere.
So, David, I don't ever have to be forgiven because I did fall down out of heaven.
You and Connie.
Anyway, we have to go. Right. Hey, David, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. We'll make this happen again and again and again, I promise you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Connor. Thank everybody who made the show go. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later. Yeah.